Good afternoon. I think we're like 30 seconds afternoon. You guys are like right on time. This is amazing. If it was me, I'd be like coming in at any minute now. But anyway, you know, I'm going to talk today about one of my absolute all-time favorite subjects, food. I have been fond of food from way back. I liked food as a kid for some weird reason, and it just kind of grew. And I actually liked food so much that as I got into my high school career, and I'm going to date myself. How many of you guys remember the subject home economics? Okay, so I'm in the right area here. So I was going to be a home economist like Betty Crocker or something along that line. And it actually turned out that as I wasn't really much of a seamstress, and I'm sure Betty Crocker was fabulous. Man, she was more of a cook. But anyway, like the science. I started to like the science of food, and I liked microbiology and making things run and so forth. So then it was the career choice of dietetics, because I could combine my love of food, and I still love food, and the science behind it. So when you talk about nutrition, it is literally the science of feeding you well. So as, and I'm looking around, and we're all in about, well, you guys look really young. I can go back, and when I refer to the 50s, sometimes I'm the only one that knows what I'm talking about. Some of you might go back to the 50s, but we'll talk. So I'm going to look today about eating for one or two. Now, many of you might be in this boat by this time in your life, and I see clients all the time. And the last thing, you go, well, hey, how many meals do you cook at home? And they go, I don't cook anymore. It's me and my spouse, and we go out. It's like, oh. And so I have to start thinking about, well, there's a lot of folks in that boat. They're retired. Their time is their own now as opposed to belonging to somebody else. And it's just as easy to go, sure, why don't we go out? And you smile because he's going to drive. And he's going to pick up the tab. And it's like, yeah, sure, that's fine with me. And I don't have to cook, heat up my kitchen, turn on the whatever. But let me ask you this. When you go out to eat, who is in charge of what's going into that food? You or that little guy behind the grill? That guy behind the grill has standardized recipes. You don't know what they created. You just know that you pay her $14.95 and they bring you out a lovely plate of food. And if everything goes right, you take some of it home so you'll have it for the next day. So I want to promote to you that you doing some of your own food preparation puts you in charge of what's going into this body, as opposed to the guy behind the grill. So why would, and also, how many of you guys do cook at home? A couple of meals a week, three meals a week? He cooks, that's awesome. So how many of you guys are eating home cooked meals like 5 to 6 times?
A day?
A week. There is a thing called small multiple feedings, but I generally don't promote meals at each one of those 5 feedings. So we tend not to cook. I mean, look where we are today. Now, did y'all bring your own meals? We relied, it looks like, on Jimmy John's, it looks like, for some of the stuff that came in today. So I want to talk about a little bit about nutrition as we get older, and how can we maximize our time and energy for food preparation, and at the same time, be efficient so I am not slaving over a stove like I used to when I had kids and everybody wanted that meal on the table by 5 o'clock. So I call it eating well for older adults, but also eating for one or two. Let's see if I can make this work. All right, so let me ask you again. So nutritionally, and I'm going back years, does an aging body need different nutrients than one a little bit younger? Now, the key word here is, do I need different nutrients because I'm getting older? No, yep. I still need the same 40, 50 that we now know about. I may not need them in the same amounts. If but I still have a need for well over 40 nutrients. And even now, as we look at the composition of fruits and vegetables, we've gotten much, much better about, you know, looking at things and analyzing the little things that we find. And we could add to this list of 40 nutrients, and you also need something called phytonutrients or phytochemicals. And these are the parts of plants that really don't act like vitamins, they don't act like minerals, but they have activity in the body. And one of the ones I always think about is lutein. Has anybody taken lutein? Does that one ring a bell? Why are you taking lutein?
Eyes.
Okay. It is not a vitamin. It's not a mineral. It's some weird substance we find in carrots and tomatoes and a few other things. But it helps our eyesight. We know it has bioactivity. So we've been eating this stuff, and we've been getting bonuses for a long time. So all of those nutrients need to come together. But there are some of concern. So how many have noticed that as you've gotten a little bit older, things don't work as well as they used to? All right? I'm a little slower. I've got 3 pairs of adjusted magnifying glasses, depending on what I have to read. Things don't move through me as well as they used to. So our body starts to age. And one of the aging things that our GI tract is actually quite prone to differences as we get a little bit older. One of the nutrients of concern is vitamin B12. Now, in a well-functioning young gut, we can assimilate vitamin B12. Vitamin B12 is involved with red blood cell formation. As we get older, there's a little thing called an intrinsic factor that floats around in our gut, and sometimes that's not there. It gets a little weaker, and we may not absorb our B12 as well. Is anybody taking B12 because their doctor said, you need to get your energy up? Anybody on B12? This is a good group. You guys must be very well energized. Of course,
My
I know.
Mother.
You're who?
My mother.
Your mother's on B12? Now, you're going to see this prescribed out there, and people are going to say it's going to give you energy. I'm going to tell you that vitamins do not give you energy. You can take all the B12 you want, and if you get too much, it's going to go right downstream, so to speak. It does work with the other nutrients in your body to help you utilize energy. It's also very involved in the red blood formation. It just isn't as easily absorbed as we get older. You might go, oh, man, I am really starting to drag. The doctor does a test. He goes, look, you look like you've got a little anemia. Let's check your vitamin B12. He goes, oh, look, it's low. I want you on B12. So that's one of the concerns that we have as we get older, one of the nutrients of concern. Folic acid, and I'm going to throw this right back to the B12 because these two guys work together in a couple of different arenas. Now, you can see all the fruits and vegetables, and that's where we're going to get the folic acid. It also is involved in our age bracket with the formation of good red blood cells. But here's another thing that folic acid and B12 do. How many are concerned about dementia? Does that word ring? Where did I put my keys, and why am I in this room? And not all of that, as you well know, is our signs of dementia. We can ask Judy. She's, you know, may be able to tell us that sometimes people forget.
More defensive than others.
No. We can help you get through that. We can set up systems for you. But B12 and folic acid also work together to help lower a protein that also circulates in your blood called homocysteine. Has anybody heard that term before? It's a bad bugger. Well, it's not bad. We've got it because we need it for certain things. But homocysteine levels, if they get too high, they can cause plaque formation. They can contribute. If we get plaque in our vessels, our blood vessels, what happens? clogs. If I get a clog in my brain, what happens? Yeah. So these two guys, folic acid and B12, work together to help drop that homocysteine level. Now, this is something that's relatively new. If you'd ask somebody in the 1950s, why do they work together? Well, they just work for blood. Now we know they help with brain health. Calcium, oh boy. Anybody broken bones lately? You know, one of my biggest fears is falling, not being able to get up because I break a hip. Calcium, how many are milk drinkers or dairy consumers? Okay. The body's need for calcium goes on. Yes, it drops a little bit. It's about 1,000 to 1,200 milligrams as we get older. Calcium obviously involved with bone health. If you're not a dairy drinker, what happens when we get older sometimes? We can't tolerate dairy. I take a glass of milk and 5 minutes later I'm in the bathroom. We lose our ability sometimes to tolerate lactose, which then turns us off to milk, and sometimes that affects yogurt, sometimes that affects our cheese, so we don't get the calcium. You have to eat a lot of broccoli to get the calcium in an ounce of cheese. Like an ounce of Parmesan has like 367 milligrams of calcium. I got to eat a lot of broccoli, which might affect some other things in my body. So I'm not going to do that. We need the calcium. Yeah, what else do you need besides the calcium? What do you need to do to drive that calcium into the bones? Vitamin D. And what type of exercise do you need to do to drive that calcium in?
Weight-bearing.
I think, don't you jog, run? Yes, okay. He's got probably got the best bones in here, right? The guy's got bones. Good sources, dairy foods, dark green vegetables, calcium-fortified foods. What about almond milk? Yes, no. Calcium?
It says on the box it is.
Mm-hmm. Your calcium is in the almond milk. It's in the cashew milk. What else? There's hemp milk, flax milk, coconut milk,
soy
milk, of course. We also get some good protein from the soy. We can get the calcium from our plant-based milks. That's about as good as it gets. Unless you're buying one now that is also protein fortified. So we have a need for calcium. And, of course, vitamin D. Now, we have an advantage down here because we could go outside and stand out in the sun without sunscreen. Don't tell. Yeah, 10 minutes. Just out there. Don't tell your dermatologist. You've got to go out there without the sunscreen if you expect the sun to convert the chemicals in your skin to vitamin D. So then, where else can I get vitamin D? If you're not drinking milk because you're lactose intolerant, where are you going to get your vitamin D?
A pill.
Okay. Sure, of course. Dairy mushrooms. You'll notice, how many mushrooms do you have to eat to get a significant amount of vitamin D? A lot.
Oh.
It's a lot. It's a weird thing. It's like mushrooms are good sources of D. They're a fungus. I don't know what they're doing to make vitamin D. But they actually came up pretty high. But the sun is really it. This is one of the vitamins that is still under a lot of scrutiny. It actually has been, our recommended daily allowance was actually increased a couple of years ago because science basically said, we're not getting enough. Right now, I believe it's about 600 international units. We've got folks who are pushing to get that up to the 1,000 and even 2,000 a day. Why? Because vitamin D is not just active for bone formation, it is actually active in your brain. We know people who have been surveyed, and when they find that the vitamin D levels are low, there is an increased risk for Alzheimer's and dementia. It is also active, it's just active everywhere. So we're looking at trying to, as science, as the dietitians, let's cut to the chase. We're trying to get that vitamin D level raised again. This is a very long process. It's probably going to be a while before we see it. But you've got to have that vitamin D. It's one of the crucial nutrients. Potassium, anybody on potassium supplements? Hand just shot up. Banana, how many eat a banana a day? I eat my banana every day because it's full of potassium. So potassium and The element that works with that is called sodium salt. So we know that salt is related to high blood pressure, right? Salt can also contribute to you retaining fluid, which is a bugaboo. So the other side of the coin is getting, here you're also going to see that picture again, plenty of fruits and vegetables. These are great sources of potassium. Yeah, there's some low ones out there. Bananas come up, potatoes come up to the top, eat the skin. Oranges are out there with high potassium. Some of the melons, the more fruits and vegetables, the more potassium. Now, interestingly, a glass of milk, great source of potassium. But here again, if dairy is not in your repertoire, you can't rely on that source. What about meat as a source of potassium? Chicken, fish, red meat, dare I say. Can I get potassium from meat? Pretty good. Yeah, it's about 300 milligrams per 3 ounces. So another, we've got potassium everywhere. Where does most of our sodium come from?
The salt shaker.
You got it. I would venture to say that Jimmy John's roast beef or ham or chicken that was on the sandwiches has a hearty amount of sodium in it, like a lot. So it's really quite easy to get the sodium into the diet. But again, one of our recommendations for fruits and vegetables is about 4.5 cups a day. And when we get that much, we've got a great source of potassium coming into the diet.
Are you talking cooked or fresh?
Either way. Now, if you overcook your vegetables, you know, you know how we used to do it? You took that block of frozen stuff, you put it in boiling water, and you boiled it. We've gotten better with our vegetable cooking. So steam your vegetables. There is a leaching process. If you throw them in water and boil them, that boiling water is going to leach out some of that potassium and the other nutrients. So steaming does have a tendency to preserve it. I keep standing in front of you. I'm so sorry. So, last but not least, and water is a nutrient. We live in a dry area. What's the recommendation on water? Just ballpark it.
8 8-ounce
glasses. I'm not getting away from that. I've got some people who will do the 6. We're not great water consumers. And then there are those who hit that 10 mark or even more. Depending on your activity level, it will certainly make a difference. But hydration, you'll lose 2% of your body weight because you're dehydrated. You're going to feel tired. You're going to feel a little dizzy. You're not going to be able to function well. Staying hydrated is so crucial. And last but not least, this really isn't a nutrient, but it certainly comes from our carbohydrates. How important is fiber?
Very.
Okay, we'll just leave it at that. Very important. There's two kinds. There's the soluble and the insoluble. Certainly contributes to regularity. How much do we need? A lot. Okay. A lot. It's about 14 grams per 1,000 calories. So most of us, if we're shooting for about 25 grams a day, we're doing pretty well. Where am I going to get 25 grams of fiber a day?
Vegetables.
And?
Whole
grains, absolutely. Wonder Bread, yeah. Or a wheat whole grain, you bet. So I like to kind of throw this out because so many folks are not fond of carbohydrate foods. Oh, I've left the carbohydrates out of my diet. I don't eat anything. I don't eat carbs anymore. I have vegetables and meat. Well, number one, your carbs are going to be your energizers. They supply the calories. But our carbohydrate foods supply fiber. We want to get those fresh vegetables, fresh fruits, and whole grains into the diet because we need the fiber. Calories, okay. So our caloric demand decreases with advancing age. Sorry. So we have less lean mass, we are less active. Which comes first? Do I lose my mass or do I become less active because I retired and then my mass decreases?
Increases.
Some of us are a little more active. But, you know, there is a loss of mass as we get older. Now, some of you are going, wait a minute. Now, I have not experienced any of that yet. What is going on? We're talking about your lean body mass. We're talking about your muscles. And our muscles tend to shrink a little bit over time. I will throw it out to you, ladies and gentlemen, that you probably are not as strong as you were when you were in your 30s. Fair thing? Unless you are currently working at it, unless you're at the gym and really, I kid you not, pumping iron, you are probably not as strong. You have probably lost muscle mass. If I lose muscle mass, my demand for calories goes down. I could consume 2,200 perhaps in my 20s. If I consume 2,200 today, I would be bouncing down the street very shortly. So my mass is a little bit less. My caloric demand goes down as I get older. Just words to remember. The challenge is to meet the nutritional demands with fewer calories. So, you know, how many know what the USDA pyramid was and the recommendations? Does that ring a bell for some folks? They always base that intake on 2,000 calories, kind of a nice, even number out there. Then they would determine how many ounces of meat and how many glasses of milk and fruits and vegetables and so forth. I'm not eating 2,000 anymore. Is it harder to be well-fed the older we get? You bet. There are less calories for frills because more calories have to go to get the foods that we really need. So, pardon?
You want a cook list, too.
You want, exactly. A, I don't have.
I am 90 years old, mother of 13 children. Whew! And I got so tired of cooking, I just turned over to my husband.
Well, at least you got a guy that will cook for you.
Yeah,
there you go. Now, and then she brings up a very good point. You know, if you don't want to cook, find somebody who does. Say, hey, I'm going to give you room and board. Just do the cooking. We'll be fine. You know, that's all I'm asking. Absolutely. But you bring up a really good point. You know, we've got more time, but do I want to spend that time cooking? And if I don't want to spend my time cooking, how am I going to get the nutrients I need? And if I go to the grocery store, what am I going to put in my shopping cart? Now, there are some places in town you can go to get meals. No, you can go to the senior center. Hafen Center down there, downtown St. George. If you live out in Hurricane, there's one out there. You don't have to cook. I will not vouch for what they're serving. I don't even know if they try to keep the salt out, to be very honest. But there are some free or lower cost meals out there. So you could get a hot meal at lunch and go home and have leftover sandwich, a sandwich that you cook, or a sandwich that you could prepare. No hot stuff, just something easy. Just a quick thing on digestive challenges. Tolerance of some foods decreased. Boy, that's the truth. Digestion is slower. Remember, some things kind of slow down as we get older. Senses decrease. I actually talked to folks who have lost their sense of smell, or their sense of smell has decreased to the point where food does not taste good. It has not near the interest that it used to have because the flavor perception is gone. Dentition might get a little worse. We do have ways to take care of that. And again, that appetite and decrease. I'm going to flip through some of the social changes here again. I'm alone. It's just me and my spouse. Neither of us drive, and that happens. What do you do if you can't get out of the house? We do have Meals on Wheels here. They only serve 4 days a week. And I don't think you can go out to Hurricane and St. George and be on both of their rosters for Meals on Wheels.
But they have big servings, so you could make them for 8 meals.
Yeah.
Really? Are they that big?
2 meals on Friday.
Where, for Hurricane?
Well, they do from here. You can get a second.
Oh, can you? Okay. All right, that's something I did. That's from our senior center down here? Well, how about that? So that covers another day for you, but you're still left with a couple of days where no one's bringing in the food. What do you do? So meals for one or two, no worries about what the family likes. It's just you and your spouse. You do not have to be a short order cook if it's just you and your spouse, right? What do you want for dinner tonight? Great, let's do tuna patties. That works for me. Less money spent on food. Disadvantages: recipes frequently make 4 or more servings, which may not be a disadvantage. We'll talk about that. Recipes are time or labor intensive, and more planning may be involved. So eating well. So I always ask, how many of you guys will eat leftovers? That's good, because I will have people come in and I will hear, it's always the other person, he doesn't eat leftovers. He won't let me do leftovers.
Let him starve.
Exactly. Well, here's $5. Go get yourself something to eat. So I'm a big fan of leftovers. I know that you all cook, that you do, you love to cook. Yeah, sure. And you were good cooks and still are good cooks. So I'm a big fan of cooking in quantities. Because if I cook something that serves six, and there's only two of us, I have how many more meals out of that dish? Two more meals. How many of you guys have freezers at work? I'm just going to, you know, there you go. I have to say, I've got freezers over there. There's always that chest freezer in the garage that hasn't worked for years and nobody's thrown it out. So if you've got to cook, choose a day where you can devote a couple of hours to doing food preparation. Now, if I'm going to bother to heat up my oven and I throw two pieces of chicken in there, how efficient is that? It isn't. But if I threw eight chicken breasts in there on the top shelf and I had a small pork roast on the shelf underneath that, how many meals did I probably just cook meat for? And I'm just using meat as an example here. A week. And what can I do with that chicken? Do I have to just keep eating chicken breast after chicken breast after chicken breast? No! I can chop that chicken up. I can make a burrito. I can make a sandwich. I can make a salad. I can do all kinds of things once I get that chicken cooked. Same thing with the pork. I might serve a hot pork dinner, but then what will I do with that little piece that's left? I shred it with barbecue sauce, and I make barbecue sandwiches toward the end of the week. So if I'm going to heat up my kitchen and turn on that stove and devote an hour or so to cooking, I'm not just throwing two pieces of chicken in that or throwing two pieces of salmon in there. I am going to cook so I have stuff that I can use for the rest of the week. What about pre-cooking starches? What pre-cooks really well?
Rice.
Rice, exactly. Can you imagine I'm cooking two portions of rice? That is like really... That is like such a waste. So you throw out a pot of rice, and I'll throw out another one. How many of you guys like quinoa? A couple hand back there. Quinoa, great grain, cooks up like rice. Throw it in the pot, cook it up, put it in individual containers, throw it in the freezer, throw it in the refrigerator. Same thing with the rice. Pasta, not so much. It's hard to reheat pasta, just like reboiling it. It gets a little weird. But if you blend it with a sauce, like a marinara sauce, you can reheat those. Yes, ma'am.
According to the doctors in the doctor's program, if you eat a lot of wheat, you develop belly.
Oh, you know what?
Is that true?
No. Those guys are standing up there getting paid to lie. No, I'm kidding. Okay. Yeah, they look great, though. Don't they look fabulous? My doctor should look so good. Anyway, I bet I wouldn't mind. I went, okay, fine. Yeah, come on, let's chat for a half hour. This is my take on that one, okay? So we have been able, as a population of human beings, to eat wheat for thousands of years. Now, I wasn't around at the cradle of civilization. I'm going to think that obesity was not an issue. But they ate wheat, they tolerated, they worked out. When you look at something as large as a human being, when you look at things changing, it doesn't go like, here's an incident, we change. Now, there are some molecular things that do happen that fast. But we take some time to adjust. And we, as a race of humans, have not unadjusted to the tolerance of wheat. As a matter of fact, we're probably better able to tolerate it now than we ever were. Why they say, there's a doctor out there that wrote a book called Wheat Belly. Some of you have probably seen that. There may be some science behind it. I'm sure he's got a list of references. But under normal circumstances, your body can, don't eat pennies, but you can eat just about anything. Now, granted, there are changes. Lactose intolerance, if you're not drinking milk and you didn't drink milk for 20 years and all of a sudden you thought, wouldn't a glass of milk taste good right now? And you drank that milk, you're going to pay for it. But under normal circumstances, we've been eating wheat. Your mom served you, you know, white bread. You had, oh my gosh, you ate pasta. You ate all this stuff. You don't all of a sudden go, oh my gosh, that is something that's going to make me fat. It's not. It's not. It's been around too long. We tolerate it. There is, as a matter of fact, oh, you guys, you're so hot for me. This is wonderful. Pardon me while I digress. So I get these newsletters in the mail, and this is one of the better ones. I kid you not, I opened my mail yesterday, and golly darn, what's in here? 5 tips for eating to age well. Could not have happened any better. But down here in the corner, no benefit from gluten-free diets. This came out, despite blah, 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 they could be a waste of time and money. According to a new review, researchers make the case that for most people, except for those with celiac disease or gluten sensitivity, there is no published data that indicates any benefits of adhering to a gluten-free diet. Journal of the American Academy of Physician Assistants, August 2015. No published support that going gluten-free has any benefit. If you are truly celiac diseased, absolutely. Your life depends on going gluten-free. So even though there are hot topics out there, I'm a little off my topic here. We can't just go, oh, my gosh, that must be true for me, too. And then I don't eat certain things. Like, I don't eat kale. True confession. I know that kale is one of the hottest vegetables out there. People love it. It's tough unless you chop it up into small pieces. It tastes like weird cabbage. You know, and then if you blend it into a beverage, then you're drinking something that's olive green, and olive green is not my favorite color to consume. It's just, so there's a lot of reasons why I'm not a kale fan. I love spinach. I know it's not the same family, but I will eat spinach. Not going to put it in a smoothie. Don't like the color. But I will eat spinach. So we have our own, you know, choices and our preferences. But sometimes when something comes out and says, this is bad, don't eat. There's the list of the 10 worst foods always, always out there. It's like, don't eat chicken Alfredo. Don't eat your Starbucks lattes. And there's don't go to the Cheesecake Factory. There's a lot of no's out there. And like, you know, if I want to have a piece of lime cheesecake, and it turns out that since there is no Cheesecake Factory here, I go to, where, I don't know, Vegas, Salt Lake, and I have my $20 wedge of lime cheesecake, and it's this big, and I will never have it again, at least for another year, I'm not going to worry about it. If I bought 3 of them to take home to my freezer so I could enjoy a piece for the next several months, that's an issue. But all foods fit. You just have to, ready for this? You have to take some of it with a grain of salt when somebody tells you what something's bad for you. And I don't even know where that phrase came from, but it's been around forever. I like it because it's food related. Just take it with a grain of salt. No, don't take salt. Take a grain of potato. Don't really do that. So anyway, I digress. But anyway, come on back to the tips for eating well for 1 or 2. If you're going to have a meal, one of my favorite suggestions is up here, is try to include foods from 3 food groups per meal. Now you're going to go, oh my gosh, how much food is that? I'll give you an example. Breakfast. I have a small bowl of bran buds. I get it from the grain group. I top it with my half a cup or so of non-fat or 1% milk. There's another group. And I put fresh peaches on top. So in something as small as a bowl of cereal, I have 3 food groups represented. That's considered a meal. If I sit down to what I call a hot place special, what they used to do that at Denny's, I think. I have some sort of protein. It might be fish. It might be my salmon for the week. It might be chicken again. I have some nice quinoa with some sautéed red peppers involved in that, and a lovely broccoli. broccoli mix going on. I've got my food groups. I've got my grain. I've got my protein. I've got my broccoli. Does it have to be a 12-inch plate worth of food? No. You can get down to the 9-inch, and sometimes as we get a little bit older, it might even be the 7-inch plate. But we want to take the opportunity at that meal to get some nutritional value. So try to think of meals in three food groups. Converse at your meals. Don't eat in silence. Put some flowers on the table as we've done here. Community meals are out there. One dish meal. How many guys have a crock pot? Are you using them still?
Oh, yeah.
Gosh, you throw a chicken in a crock pot, you've got four meals right there. Label them. If you throw stuff in your refrigerator or your freezer, please label and date.
And date them.
There's nothing worse than pulling out a piece of foil wrapped something, and you have to unwrap it, and then the foil sticks to it, and you're like, okay, this is probably not going to be worth saving. And you can't identify it when you open it up. Don't eat that, okay? Just throw it out. Make sure you label. Get your, you know, your magic markers or whatever they are, and get your food labeled so you know what it is. There is no reason why you can't cook ahead. I think that is, again, one of the number one tips for eating for one or two. If you're not opposed to leftovers, take that time, Saturday, Sunday, maybe it's Thursday afternoon. You think about what I'm going to do next week, where we're going, what kind of plans we've got. Okay, we're going to be home these four nights. What can I do? Do I have it in my freezer now? Do I need to go to the market? Pick it up, cook it all at once, put it in the refrigerator. How many guys have microwaves? Okay. All right. Just it is like a standard operating piece of equipment now. So you have to nuke something a little, you know, to get it heated back up. That's okay. You're not actually even losing that much nutritional value, if at all, if you're reheating that food. So pack it up, individual portions, open the fridge, grab it, nuke it, instant dinner. It doesn't take that much time, but it does take time at the forefront to think about what you're going to cook, and you got to take that time to cook it. You got to prepare it, whether it's crock pot, oven, or whatever. So eat well, be well, enjoy your life. I gave you some handouts, and when Mitzi asked me to bring this in, she said, we want menus. And I'm like, menus for one or two? We've got handouts coming out. We got gobs. I think we have enough for everybody. So as we get older, let me just, again, I always have to ask my audience, how many of you guys have a different breakfast every day of the week? Every breakfast is different. Today it's yogurt, the next day it's French toast, then I do eggs, and then I do cereal. Aren't we kind of consistent with breakfast? It's either breakfast A or breakfast B. Would you say that? We are creatures of habit. We've been doing this for many years. There's no sense to start doing frittatas at breakfast. I've never done them in my life. So when I start thinking about meals, my breakfasts are usually pretty cut and dried. If I'm home, my lunches are usually consistent also. You ask somebody what they have for lunch, well, I usually make a sandwich or I have leftovers. Sometimes I do a salad. So there's not a lot of variability coming in at the lunch meal unless that's your main meal of the day, in which case it might be the hot meal that you change out and do salads. But for lunchtime, many of us are very consistent eaters. This was probably a great change of pace for you guys today. A little eating out. It's the dinner meal. It's dessert. I got dessert today. So I get dessert once a week, and it's usually here at the church. So dinner is usually the meal that we have to think about. So there is a handout in there. And it kind of makes things simple. It's the very simple one, this black and white one. And it basically gives you a couple of very simple options for breakfast. It gives you some options for midday lunch. If you flip it over, it's literally a matter of combining foods. Did we get enough?
No, our people didn't get enough.
Do we need to copy more? You make.
I need another set. Sorry.
No, that's okay. I'm sorry.
Did everybody get a handout?
Did everybody get
a handout? Wait,
no.
Did you guys? If you're with a significant other, you can share. It's okay. So breakfast, there's some options. Lunch has got some options. And this gives you some options on grazing versus having a large meal. So if you're going to graze, and some of us do that, we do a little here, a little here, a little here, and a little here, you still want to make sure that you're trying to get well fed. In other words, grazing is not a bag of potato chips and ranch dressing dip. We just calorically can't afford that like we used to. So my grazing might be a small scoop of cottage cheese and a peach half. My grazing might be a couple of Triscuit crackers with a little peanut butter. It might be a hard-cooked egg and a fresh peach, where I'm making an effort, even though the amount of food is very small, I'm making the effort to get some nutritional value in it. Do I, you know, is there room for Oreos and milk at night? Yeah, on occasion. But when I graze, I want to make sure that I'm getting some good nutritional foods. Same thing at dinner time. Again, that's the meal that if I'm going to plan something, it's most likely going to be the hot meal. And even to jot down, you know, Monday, what the main course is going to be. Well, we're going to do a chicken here. We'll do our salmon here. We'll do meatless Monday. I've got some leftover pork in there. We'll do something like a pork chop. We'll do another chicken, and maybe the Saturday night we go out. Just knowing what the main item is going to be can set you up on Sunday or whatever day you choose to do the preparation to think ahead and go, hey, I got to pull that pork out. If we're going to do barbecue pork sandwiches on Wednesday, we got to cook that off Sunday when I do the chicken. You can cook fish ahead. I think, you know, reheating fish, you got to be a little bit careful because it can overcook quite easily. But you can cook ahead your fish. You can cook ahead just about any protein and have it ready to go. There's a page of tips in there, and then the other clump that you got has a lot more tips for eating for one or two. And then it also has, how many of you guys use those rotisserie chickens? That's what they're called. Oh my gosh. How many of you get them at Costco where they're like, wow, look at the size of this chicken? I kid you not, I bought one, and I've only bought one. That's odd. But I looked at the guy and said, this is only, what, $3.99 or something? And this chicken had to be like 2 pounds of chicken. Yeah. It was a great deal.
The lost leader.
It is. All these people take those chickens out of there. Yeah, they've all got a chicken or a pizza when they leave that store. But anyway, there are some recipes on there that basically say, cook one rotisserie chicken and do it four ways. One of those chickens will, you can do all kinds of stuff with it. So the same concept can go to, you know, I know beef is not on everybody's list anymore, but if you did happen to cook a beef roast, a small little rump roast, you're going to get a hot meal, maybe two, but you can do barbecue beef sandwiches, you can shred it up and put it in tacos, you can do all kinds, you can actually put it on a salad if you wanted with some nice great mixed greens. So if you're going to cook, make it count. Any questions?
This is from the doctors again, that if the wheat rice has a lot of cyanide, so you have to wash it many times.
Are you thinking of regular rice and arsenic by any chance?
Regular rice, yeah. It has a little bit of cyanide too, so you have to wash it like 3 times. So I've been washing my rice like 6 times. But what happens, it takes out all the vitamins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because in the Philippines, we were taught to just wash it 2 times.
Rinse it twice and then cook it?
And then cook it.
You're probably okay doing that. Yes, rice has arsenic in it, and apparently cyanide.
Arsenic.
Arsenic. Huh?
So is apple.
Yeah. Is it enough to do you in?
No.
Oh, that was Laetril or something back in. I'll date myself on that one. Yeah, there is, and the amount is such a trace amount. And again, a culture that eats a lot of rice, there may be some concerns there. But for most of us, if rice is not a staple, it's maybe once or twice a week. I throw it in the pan, I boil it, I eat it. I'll probably, you know, collapse in the parking lot or something. But yeah, they do say that little bit of arsenic, if there was a cumulative effect, it actually has to do with your cardiovascular function. But I seriously, I have not seen, let me rephrase, I have not seen a cardiovascular event that was, and it was linked to the consumption of rice. It's probably not going to happen.
I eat rice every day.
And you know what? In your life to talk about
food.
It. You're going to be okay. You can eat apples. But yeah. You know, and there was, I'll give you, how many know what aspartame is? It's still around. It's the blue one. And so as it goes through the body, it gets transformed. And for one brief moment in time, it turns into some chemicals that are not really good for the body. One of them was formaldehyde. But it's like, you know, it's like a blink of an eye. So the stuff doesn't accumulate. It's gone. It doesn't have this accumulation of this very bad product. And so people go, oh, my gosh, we can't use aspartame. It forms formaldehyde or formic acid. I'm sorry, I can't remember exactly. There it is, my dementia coming in. It was one, but it doesn't stay there. It's not like it's going to start accumulating here, and pretty soon you've got this wad of a bad chemical. So we have to be listening to science sometimes, not necessarily everything we hear. Prevention Magazine, Reader's Digest, my Bible, you know, AARP, you know, even those guys. I actually do have some stuff from them that was based on real science, but you've got to watch what you hear in the media. And let's cut to the chase. The doctors are on a form of media, but they're getting paid so well for that. Why would they establish? I mean, just really. Anyway, it'd be so nice, sir.
Healthy snacks.
I do actually like nuts for snacks. You know, you can't go overboard with them, but your pistachios, your almonds, your walnuts, even your pecans. If you need selenium, Brazil nuts are fabulous for selenium. Selenium is one of our great antioxidants. You got to watch the portion when you do nuts. 1 ounce, 150, 160 calories. Macadamia is not so much. Those who love those chocolate-covered macadamias, not as healthy as a handful of almonds. So fruit is also a wonderful snack. I happen to like some of the lower-fat cheeses. Again, I have to watch the amount. I'm not going to sit there and, you know, lop off 4 ounces of cheese and have two crackers with it. But I will have cheese and crackers as a snack. Vegetables with a little hummus. I don't know if you guys like hummus. Again, Costco, you know, a giant tub of multi-flavored hummus. Hummus is a great snack. It's a garbanzo bean. It's got a little protein. It's got a little fiber in it, a little bit of oil, a little bit of salt, but moderation. You know, we just don't want to go overboard with that snacking. Yes, ma'am.
I have to mention the latest issue of Science News and coffee. Have you read that?
No, but I love coffee.
4 pages of what it does for you positively.
I will tell you.
I've been drinking it all my life.
So have I. I used to race out to the kitchen to get that last swallow. I have not read anything negative. Now, I get a lot of stuff that crosses my desk, but coffee is the first thing. And they link it, you know, they look at heart disease, high blood pressure, cardiovascular function, heart rate, memory, endurance. Everything I read about coffee, great source of boron, by the way. It's good, yeah, the caffeine, it's, they're the only thing I saw recently said that over 4 cups in a day, which is, I couldn't tell you how much caffeine is it, might get a little iffy, but there is nothing negative about coffee as far as its health effects.
They tested it up to 6 cups.
Up to 6?
Nothing wrong. Nothing. That's as far as they went.
I'm,
so maybe 7 would get you.
It's good to know. Okay, I'll cut my consumption now at the 7 mark just in case. There is a cup of coffee in my car as we speak. It's just waiting with my name on it.
You're talking about, now I'm waiting for the chocolate one.
Well, and I've not really read anything negative about chocolate either, so I'm...
We're talking about 6 to my 16-ounce mugs.
16-ounce mugs? Can we just find what a cup is?
Okay. There you go.
No, I get that. I brew it, and by the time I leave in the morning, there's like the swallow left, and that's the way it goes. But yeah, I'll nurse a cup of coffee all day. That's just.
And decaf is as good as.
It's actually the coffee. It's not necessarily the caffeine,
it's
but they actually
the
have looked at the caffeine, and they're really, they're thinking, oh, caffeine is going to send your heart rate to the roof. It doesn't. Doesn't. Yes, ma'am.
There are many companies that produce capsules that are supplements for fruits and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
If you're taking a multivitamin, is this necessary to do these additional supplements?
if you're eating well, you probably don't need to eat any kind of supplements. Now, I qualify that by saying eating well. But if I'm taking, just because insurance or whatever, I take a multivitamin mineral supplement, like Theragram's M, Centrum Silver, whatever, I don't need to supplement it with a vegetable fruit capsule. I would much rather eat an apple than take a pill of desiccated apple powder. Huh? Most wines, you know, again, it's a moderation thing. Recommendation these days is women, one glass, and a glass is about 5 ounces of wine. Red has a little bit more going for it than the white. Men get two.
It's unfair.
It is unfair. It is unfair.
But it makes the relationship unfair. Is that?
Absolutely. That's the way it was written. Even the American Heart Association says men two, women one. But, yeah, the red wine, the dark red, those Merlots and so forth, yeah.
How about I had the bilateral mastectomy, so I had cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that you cannot drink too much wine, even if it's red wine, you know, fruit wine. Is that true?
You know what, I can't speak to that because I don't know why they would say that. I'm not familiar with what.
Yeah, you can only drink like occasionally, but not every day. And
when you look at breast cancer recurrence or the risk of it, there is some science that indicates that the alcohol needs to be lower. And I couldn't quote you the study right now, but it has crossed my desk. So there's a whole new subject. Whole different subject. We can go on and on about the nutritional aspects of breast cancer.
Because sometimes, you know, we buy this fruit wine like pomegranate, sangria, and my husband takes one every meal, and so I just take like maybe twice a week like that because I was afraid of the.
I would say that's probably okay because that's not certainly an overindulgence. So. Yes, ma'am.
A couple things. Yogurt, I prefer the Greek, but if you read the ingredients, like in Yoplait or some of the other things, I mean, it's all chemicals.
It's going to get better. The big hot word right now is sugar.
Yeah.
It's like the new villain. So I just ate a chobani this morning, and, of course, right on the chobani level goes, hey! We've only got 15 grams of carbohydrate in our 5.3-ounce container, and everybody else has 25. So we are 40% less. There's a lot of question as to why we add white sugar to so many things. Ketchup is an example. Why do we put corn syrup in ketchup? It's beyond me. But the sugar is a big issue. You know, if you look at other ingredients and you look at manufacturing, you've got masses of people that want a product that tastes good. That's about as good as it gets. And when they start altering and taking things out, the manufacturer's got to make sure that that product is still going to meet public approval. So we do see things like lecithins and gums to make things smoother. And it's a matter of personal choice. I've got some people, they won't eat carrageenan. It's like the product has carrageenan, they're not going to eat it. Well, okay, that's a personal choice. It's not going to do anything for you or against you, but it's just a personal choice. So as you go shopping, you know, and I know that you all take at least 3 hours to write out your list and go to every aisle and shop only by your list. Nothing ever goes in that cart unless it's on my list, so you don't show your spouse the backside of the list. So, read some labels. You know, we're getting better. I'll get a classic is margarines. Margarine spreads. Oh my gosh, you couldn't pronounce half of the words on the label. They were emulsifiers and preservatives. And now there's a product, I think I can't remember which one it is. It's got like 5 ingredients. It's like water, oil, salt, and 2 other things. And now we can pronounce the words. It's like, okay, I can probably use this without feeling too bad. But you're going to find products making an effort to simplify. Get some of this weird stuff out and still have a product that is mass appealed. And yogurt's a classic example. It's got, oh my gosh, there's so many products out there.
And then I love shrimp, and that's one of the good guys. But when you read about shrimp from Thailand and those
it's mass produced. They're shrimp farms.
Farm.
They're farmed. Right. They're farmed. We have to do it.
Waste and antibiotics and jammed in together. I mean, do you have any?
I don't eat shrimp. No, again. I don't eat tilapia. I don't eat shrimp. I only raise wild caught salmon. Again, I have to take that under consideration in my own, personal preferences. If you start reading some of this stuff, you're going, oh my gosh, that's not even going to come into my house. But again, if I have to feed the masses, and I'm talking, I don't know how many billions of people we have in the world, and a lot of them eat shrimp, there has to be a way to supply the demand at a reasonable cost for those people who want it, and sometimes, the growing conditions aren't perfect. There are smaller places that will actually, I'm thinking of the East Coast and the oysters, where they actually have very controlled environments for growing these oysters so that they are a product that is, if you will, superior to those that are farm-raised down in, some island in the South Pacific or something. So you have to, you're going to pay more for something that's more carefully farmed or grown. Look at organics. But for feeding the masses, we're still at that point where, supplying the demand at a reasonable cost versus, hey, everybody's going to eat organic, but nobody can afford it. So there's a happy medium in there. We're still striving to get it. For those of you, and we live in a great country, don't get me wrong, we've got great choices here. We can choose what we want on our plates. And if you choose to, do a grass-fed beef, and that is how you prefer to eat, or no red meat whatsoever, you've got that choice. You can still be well-fed. So, yeah, food is complex. Let me tell you how complex it is. It is amazing.
You want to opine on GMOs?
So here's a GMO. So let's talk about potatoes. Do any of you eat potatoes? How about tomatoes? Okay. So before we knew that we could actually alter the genetic makeup of plants, we would have to do it the old-fashioned way, right? So if this tomato was drought tolerant and this one over here wasn't, we would like cross these and hope for the best. So now we can do it by transferring genes. And as I think it's corn, soybeans, there's five or six crops that are very predominantly GMO driven. Not a lot of that necessarily is for human consumption, although it may go for feed products and for, dare I say, ethanol production. So again, it's a very early stage in this. I don't know what's going to happen 100 years out if I eat GMO soybeans. Right offhand, I'm not worried about it. I'm not going to worry about it. It's not something that's in my realm of concern. It's great. Here again, products are labeled non-GMO certified. The companies have gone that extra step to make sure that the product is what they're saying it is. The question is, do we really know what the effects are? And I'm erring on the side of science right now going, it's probably not that big a deal at this point. Now, if you ever look at how they make insulin, they used to manipulate bacteria, and they would transfer little things in bacteria, and they would produce more insulin so we could give it out in different shots. We use a lot of things that are manipulated. How many know what Monsanto is? How many remember Disneyland and that weird ride into the future with Monsanto? That company is still around. You would think if they were really messing up everything, they'd be, out of here. They're still around. But if you ever see their ads now, they're like, hey, guys, we are trying to feed the world the best we can, and we're making the fertilizers under, it's kind of taken a twist. it's this great stuff at Disneyland. How many years ago was that? But, I'm going to bring it back to, we have a world to feed, and the land that is dedicated to production of food is shrinking. So we have to be able to produce more at a reasonable cost because we've got a lot of people to feed. And sometimes we have to use, chemicals to enhance growth or stop bugs from taking out half of my crop. You've got that decision. You got to make it in your own mind. But right now, give me a soybean. I don't care where it came from. I'll eat it. Give me an edamame. It's okay with me.
Did everybody get Chris's hand
have friends that you can just download it and give it to them. And we do want to thank Christy so much.
Hey, thanks. Thank you. I love coming out here. Well, it's nice to know that.